Good evening, Jim. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you, Andrew. Glad to be here.
You work with the Air Force. What got you into the Air Force?
My father was in the Air Force many years ago. He was an airlifter, flew around the world, and I gradually developed an interest in serving my country.
Now, you're here, of course, as a member of the Air Force, but you're speaking today in a private capacity.
Yes, I conducted some research in the last year when I attended the Air War College, which is the Air Force's senior educational institution. I conducted some research on planetary defense, and I'm here at the International Astronautical Congress to present the results of my research.
Well, we've all seen the two movies that came out recently, Deep Impact and Armageddon. What did you think of those, Jim?
Both of those were very interesting. We need to keep in mind that they, of course, were produced by Hollywood. They were produced for the purpose of entertainment and for making money. Both of them had various aspects that were technically correct. As I'm sure most of your viewers who have seen the movies realize, they had a lot of things about them that were technically not correct. In particular, I would say that the Deep Impact, which is probably the more technically accurate of the two, one of the things that it did, and it was kind of a story of hope as its theme, and it very much de-emphasized at the end of the movie the extent of the devastation that we could expect due to an impact of an asteroid or a comet. Armageddon, it had many inaccuracies concerning space flight. I think most of those are obvious even to the less familiar viewer. It's a premise, for example, that we could be impacted by an asteroid the size of Texas. I don't know how many of your listeners in Australia know exactly how big Texas is, but it's about 1,250 kilometers wide. There are no asteroids that large. But to believe that we could mount an effective mitigation or defense against an asteroid with only a few days preparation, as was shown in the movie, is stretches the limits of credibility quite a bit.
So let's go back a bit then. Is the threat to the Earth from asteroids real? For example, how many asteroids are there, and do they really actually cross the Earth's orbit?
The threat is very real. We don't read about it much in our history books because it's only been very recently that we've recognized that. The first Earth-crossing asteroid was only recognized in 1932. And it's only been much more recently than that the scientific community has recognized that these objects are really a threat to Earth. This came to the forefront in 1980 when physicist Luis Alvarez first proposed that the extinction of the dinosaurs 65 million years ago was in fact due to climatic effects that were caused by the impact of a large body. Now we know that a crater has been located off the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. This was probably about a 10-kilometer diameter object that impacted, lofted millions upon millions of tons of dirt and debris into the atmosphere, causing many months of darkness, significant climatic changes, and producing the effect that that we used to call nuclear winter. Now the terms cosmic winter or impact winter are now coming to the forefront. But there are many thousands of objects. Asteroids that do cross Earth's pass, we call these Earth-crossing asteroids. Some people also call them near-Earth objects. Also, we have long-period comets, which spend very little of their time near the Earth or near the Sun. These are potentially even more dangerous because we can't locate these objects until they come inside of about Jupiter's orbit, which gives us about 1 year of potential lead time to find these objects.
In the movie Deep Impact, we saw one of the comets being found by a teenager. Would this happen in reality? Could it happen in reality?
Yes, that's a very real scenario, and you bring up one of the major problems currently with the near-Earth object threat, and that is that there is very little formal, organized, very few formal organized programs for actually going out and doing the surveillance of these objects. Currently, about 25% of the objects that are found by amateurs, people like you and me in their backyard. They probably have more astronomical knowledge than the average citizen, but they are amateurs. They're not operating out of a formal observatory. Most of the more formal programs are financially barely surviving. There's very little public, meaning governmentally sponsored, money being put into this, and the progress that's being made is so slow that it would take many centuries to locate all of the objects that scientists currently believe are out there to potentially threaten Earth.
Australians used to, you know, spend a fair bit of time at observatories. I know Jim McNaught and Duncan Steele, two Australians involved in that program. But the Australian government's cancelled that. What do you think we should do? And is the search going to be continue in the Northern Hemisphere?
In the Northern Hemisphere, the search continues, although, as I mentioned, at a fairly low level of effort. Although I will note that NASA has recently increased its budget for this. However, increasing a small budget still gives you a fairly small budget. As you point out, the Australian effort, which I believe was called Space Guard Australia, led by Duncan Steele, was stopped, I believe, in 1997 due to funding. That was the only significant effort in the Southern Hemisphere. Search efforts ongoing in both hemispheres is very important, because the fact is you just can't see the whole sky from either hemisphere. Earth stands to be impacted just as easily from an object coming from the area of the sky that one can see from the Southern Hemisphere as the Northern Hemisphere. So space surveillance efforts operating from both hemispheres are extremely important.
So your personal opinion then is that the Australian government should put some money into this?
My personal opinion is that globally we need to greatly increase the surveillance efforts that we have ongoing, both optically and with radar systems.
Well, suppose we did find an asteroid heading our way, and with more than just a few days' notice, and perhaps even a couple of years' notice, is there anything realistically that we could do about it?
Realistically, today there is no program ongoing or even contemplated by any government on Earth to mitigate the effect of an approaching asteroid or comet. What one would want to do is to develop a system to be able to deflect such a threatening object so that it moves from an Earth impacting trajectory to a trajectory that still would cross Earth's orbit but fail to impact Earth.
You wouldn't want to smash the thing up into small pieces.
One could certainly do that, and if you could be assured of breaking it up into pieces that were sufficiently small such that if they did impact Earth they would be disrupted in the atmosphere, then that would be okay. However, I don't think we have the technology to assure ourselves of that. My research indicates that the better alternative is to attempt to deflect the object so that it misses Earth rather than trying to destroy the object.
So how do we go about doing that?
There's been a lot of work done in this area. There was an international conference held in the early 90s looking at the technologies that were available. There are a number of technologies that have been proposed. Some you would view as coming right out of Star Trek. For example, high-energy lasers, solar sails, mass drivers, which is basically putting an engine on the object and trying to propel it out of harm's way. One of the more interesting ones is called mass alteration, which simply put means we may go up and mine the asteroid to decrease its mass. That may actually be a commercially attractive process because there are lots of minerals out there that could be commercially saleable on Earth. For the near term, however, the only technology that we have that is feasible is nuclear technology. The scenario would be that one would launch one or more nuclear weapons towards the object. you could employ a surface burst on the surface of the object, causing material to escape the gravity of the object. We're talking about fairly small objects here, generally 10 kilometers in diameter or less. Most objects are significantly less than that. Of course, they have their own gravity, being very massive, but their gravity is fairly small. It doesn't take nearly as much energy to expel mass from the object as for example, here from Earth. A surface burst, however, is relatively likely to fragment the object. As we discussed a minute ago, that's not a desirable outcome. From my research, the more opportune mechanism is to burst the nuclear device above the surface of the body. Here on Earth, we would call that an airburst. And that would radiate the surface of the object, causing a shell of material to break away, be much more likely to fragment it. However, it does change the velocity of the object, which of course would then hopefully cause it to miss Earth if we were able to impart enough of a velocity change.
So basically then what's happening is that the energy, the heat energy, you know, and all that, the other energies released by the nuclear explosion, vaporize some of the material from the comet, do they?
Most of it is not vaporized, but it causes it to break away, gives it enough energy that it can escape the local gravity of the object, changes its mass, which of course then changes its momentum, and the velocity of the object will be altered. It doesn't take a great deal of velocity change. If, for example, you could identify the object about 10 years away from Earth, and this is very plausible for asteroids because they have an orbit. You can find them that far away and define their orbits with sufficient accuracy to identify them 10, 20, maybe 30 years away. You only need to change the velocity of the object about 1/10 of a meter per second to cause it to miss Earth.
Well, Jim, do you think, your personal view, obviously not the Air Force view, that the two movies have been a help and will help promote the search for these objects, or do you think that it's been a hindrance?
Andrew, I think the movies have been both good and bad. I think they've been good in that they have hopefully raised public awareness of this. However, I would also add that they may have been a hindrance in that they may give some the impression, if they're not very well familiar with and understand this subject in detail, that they may get the impression that we do have the capability to defend ourselves against these objects upon very short notice, when in fact we have no such capability.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on the Space Show, Jim.
Thank you, Andrew. I've enjoyed being here, and I've enjoyed the beauty and the hospitality of Australia this week.
Thank you.